Hey everyone, Jordan here from Barbell Medicine. Now, we'll get to the podcast here in just a moment, but I wanted to take a second to plug our Barbell Medicine Plus option in order to help support what we do here on the podcast and beyond. Now, if you hate these ads just as much as we do, you should know that Plus members get ad-free episodes, as well as early access to our podcast, written episode summaries, videos, exclusive training information, access to a members-only podcast where Dr. Baraki and I answer your questions directly, and more exclusive content as well. If you want to support what we're doing here and become a Barbell Medicine Plus member, head over to barbellmedicine.com/plus and sign up to be a Plus member today. That's barbellmedicine.com/plus to help us out and get rid of these ads for good. Thanks for your support. Let's head to the podcast.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Welcome back to the Barbell Medicine Podcast, where we bring modern medicine to strength and conditioning and strength and conditioning to modern medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum, and on this episode, we have a very special guest. He's the owner and operator of Untamed Strength in Sacramento, California. He's California's strongest man in second strongest man in the middleweight division, and he's also the drummer for Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem Band from the Muppets. We've got Alan Thrall, the Untamed One. What's going on, man?
What's up, man? Quite an intro.
The best one yet. I think, you know, there are some people who have come across your content post beard, like they don't know the original Alan Thrall. So the Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem Band reference for Animal, obviously, that does not register. They're like, what do you mean? He's always been this clean cut guy. But there was like maybe a decade of just you were the bearded one.
Yeah. Yeah. Even at the gym, just recently, one of the ladies was mentioning something about a ponytail. And so I'd struck up a conversation with her about ponytails and when it's too tight and pulls hair. And she's looking at me like, you know, how do you know this? And I said, yeah, I used to have long hair for quite a long time. I used to have a ponytail. She said, really? You did? So yeah, not yeah. It's kind of like a past life.
Yeah. I think if there are some like things like your beard was obviously long enough where if you would rack something in the front rack position or you were doing a continental clean and press or you were even stones, I would imagine, like your beard could have gotten trapped. And so I remember that you would like not braid it, but you would do something and like a rubber band and like tuck it inside of itself. It was like this beard origami that you would have to do in order to train in a way where your beard wouldn't get pulled. That was you've got all the tricks of the trade. So
yeah, it was like a man bun on my chin.
Very hipster. Yeah, you predated all of that. So I wanted to, we haven't had you on the podcast in a while. I think the last time was when we released the original Strongman template. And, you know, obviously people want to know what is the Untamed One doing? What is he up to? So let's give people like a sort of life update, what's going on family-wise, anything new at the gym. And then we'll pop into some of the more, I don't know, people want to know how you train and some Strongman stuff. So we'll get into that too. But yeah, let's start off with a life update. What's going on? What's new with you, man?
Yeah, my son is 5. My daughter is 2. They're both soon to be 6 and 3. Wife is doing well. Kids are doing well.
Did the kids come to the gym?
Well, so yeah.
Do the kids come to the gym with you? Do they like come in and lift weights, like play around with weights or anything like that?
Sometimes I have they more so when I do some stuff at home.
Oh, okay.
I have a rack and weights at home. And they have like some rings hanging from the rafters and all that. And they'll kind of play around in there while I'm lifting. But I'll bring them every once in a while. I don't try to train with them, at the gym. But they'll come every once in a while, just like a bring your kid to work day type thing. But careful monitoring, in certain areas, cause there are some areas that, you know, like a sea of Atlas stones and they're like crawling over them. You could smash your finger between one and stuff like that. So definitely not unsupervised.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, my son will come and watch the strongman class that we do. And it's in the parking lot. So it's, you know, free roam to do whatever. And he'll jump in and do some of the stuff we're doing. But no, not often, honestly.
I'm going to be so curious what happens when they get a little bit older. Like, do they get interested in what daddy's doing in the gym or, you know, and they're so normalized, accustomed to like strongman type stuff that they think, oh, that's just what people do. So do it too. I don't know. So they haven't started lifting any weight. You haven't had them lift weights yet. It's more just been play or anything like that.
Yeah. And like I said, we have rings. I've got rings and a rope in the garage, and they just like swinging on that. And so I'll see, you know, little gains of being able to swing, being able to hold from one hand for a little bit of time, being able to swing from one ring to another ring. There's parks around my house, so we often go there.
Yeah.
So I'll count out, you know, Dad, count how many monkey bars I can get. And so he'll go, you know, up to 9, 10, 11, 12. So he's making gains that way. But no formal lifting. Everyone would like deadlift something that's sitting there on the floor, but yeah.
Yeah, they're not on program yet, but as I'm sure Dr. Miles will you know, he's going to be starting pretty soon with his kids and whatnot. The actual guidelines for youth training, it's like if you're over the age of 5, you should be lifting weights. Like that's kind of the recommendation, at least 3 times a week. So
really?
So there's it's funny, the lead author on the youth like exercise guidelines, it's Dr. Avery Fagenbaum. It's similar to my, it's not the same spelling. It's not the same.
Oh, you just, so I thought you literally just like mispronounced your name.
No. It's with A. Yeah. Exactly. So people were like, when I first went to my first NSCA conference back in like, I don't know, 2006 or 2007 or something like that. They were like, oh, are you Avery's kid? I'm like, no, I don't know an Avery, you know. Also, the spelling's wrong. We didn't just both mess it up and meet somewhere in the middle. But yeah, it's for over the age of 5, as I recall. Yeah, they should be like lifting some weights. And what they don't address in there, and obviously this would be unique to each kid, it's like, well, what sort of markers for maturity do they need to actually like do a program, for so to speak, right? Or do you even organize a program, or is it more just like play, like lift some stuff, play outside? You know, I think when we think about lifting weights, we're thinking about, oh, a squat pattern, a press pattern, row. Like we kind of get real formalized with it. But for kids, maybe it's more just like, hey, there's some stuff in the gym you could play around with, and that's fine. But to your point, probably not unsupervised. I don't know that any 5 or 6 year old, I'd be like, yeah, hey, go over to the rack, set the bar up. You're going to start squat, you know, do your warm ups, and we'll see what your work sets look like.
Exactly. I wonder how formal, you know, weight training is. Cause what if they were to do gymnastics, push ups, pull ups, handstand mm-hmm. type stuff? In a sense, it is resistance training, although sure. It's not weight training. So maybe it's synonymous. I don't know.
Yeah. Calisthenics would definitely count. I mean, those count. And even the adult guidelines are like, oh, you want to do body weight stuff? That's fine also. But yeah, I mean, my biggest gripe with the biggest gripes, I would say, with the current guidelines for either kids or adults, one, there's no program in either. Like obviously these aren't written for the lay public to consume, but so there's like professionals, you know, healthcare professionals, fitness professionals and such. But when you're reading them, if you have no experience training a kid or training an adult, you would want to have some sort of program to either recommend or some sense of things to be like, yeah, not only do you need to exercise, but here's what you need to do, you know, roughly speaking. And so like the guidelines are more just like, here's the dose of exercise that we recommend. And then also here are all the benefits, which is good. But like at the end, you want to program.
Right.
there's some country, I want to say it's like Oman or something like that, that actually has like a full set of, here are some exercises that you could do. And it's like a bodyweight squat or like an inverted row and like a, you know, some dumbbell work. And I'm like, I mean, it's not perfect, but it's better than what we have, which is just like
no program.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'll be interested to see what your kids start training. Are they going to be the strongest kids in California? Or are they gonna like
yeah, I have no plan to like, you know, I can't wait till they're lifting this or lifting that and lifting a bar. As long as they're active and doing some resistance training, that's fine with me. So yeah, whenever it piques their interest, then I'm happy to help them, but I'm not going to push anything on them.
Yeah, I think that's good advice, especially if they're otherwise playing and active, like you said. You know, I think some kids maybe will end up needing a bigger nudge, but like your family, it's so normal to be active. It'd be hard for them to not, right? They couldn't be like, Dad, I'm just going to play video games. And you'd be like, nope, we're going to go for a, you know, couple miles walk or ruck or something, you know, whatever, something like that. So, speaking of training, your training now, I think you would agree, is far different than how you've conventionally trained
over the years. I mean, is it fair to say you were predominantly Olympic lifting and powerlifting or strongman, like very, depending on whatever meet you had coming up, that would be your primary focus? Is that, that's fair to say?
Yes, absolutely.
And now, if for lack of a better term, we'll just be like everybody else on the internet, what are you a hybrid athlete now? Because you do some plyometrics and you're in your training now and you do some running, you're a hybrid athlete?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm far less attached to titles as I used to be. I think that for a long period of time, I was very structured with whatever goal I had, whatever competition I had, even, chasing some sort of numbers. And I was just very tied to some sort of identity or title. And just got a little bit burnt out on that. And so just speaking for now, maybe I'll jump in back in on that, you know, in the future. But speaking for now, I've enjoyed enjoying my training. And so if there are other things that I'm interested in, like I need to do, I like doing some running. If I like to do some calisthenic work, whatever it is, I've just really getting more enjoyment out of my training to just kind of pick and choose what I want to do rather than, you know, I have this goal or I have this competition, this meet. So this is what I have to do in order to execute whatever goal or to reach whatever goal. So I guess now my approach is much more for enjoyment as well as just for health reasons. And then within those parameters, I kind of just pick and choose what I wanted to do. And so I've become like this advanced program hopper, if you will. But yeah, I think that, you know, with that said, I have the luxury of doing this for so long that I am what I would say is gym literate. Like I understand some things that are more productive, less productive. And then I just kind of program based off of that. And so the past few years, you know, I've done, hey, I'm just going to follow this hypertrophy or bodybuilding style routine for a little while. Maybe I'll try this program with a little bit more emphasis on Olympic lifts and plyometrics. Maybe I'll do this random goal of deadlifting my mile time, whatever it is. I kind of just do things as I please, really.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because you've been training for so long, right? And the difference between how you could sort of, as you say, program hop, or even if you had no program, like nothing was written down on paper, you would default to something that's likely productive because of all of your experience. You know, it'd be really hard for you to go into the gym and do a bunch of stuff that was either like super unproductive, meaning like it wasn't possible to like generate a bunch of fitness adaptations for you, or like super risky because you were not prepared. You just wouldn't do it. You know, you just have too much experience.
Right. And I think that, you know, I don't, when I say, you know, program hopping, I it's not that I'm, you know, I'm going to just strictly do cycling for the next year, or I'm going to pick up Pilates or ultimate Frisbee. Like it's still weight training. I'm still squatting, deadlifting, pressing, just the variation in reps and exercise selection has just gone way up. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that's been the biggest change. And I haven't stressed too much about hitting certain numbers or driving up my one rep max for a number of reasons. But I'm sure the first and foremost would be just that I'm not really motivated by that at this point.
So, yeah. You don't care. Like, oh, what if I squat 565? And you're like, sorry, it doesn't get me into the gym. That doesn't get me out of bed in the morning.
Yeah. And I think that if I was to do that, if I was to right now pursue beating all time numbers, I just wouldn't enjoy the specificity that it would require in order to do that. And so, yeah, so I like to go running, and I like to go run and not worry about, oh, how's this going to affect my numbers in the gym tomorrow. Whereas if I was to say I want to squat that 565, I know I would need to stop doing some of the things that I do enjoy doing.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting thing with people's journey. And maybe you can speak to this, like from where you started to where you are now. It's like I see this, there's a pull towards specificity early on in people's training careers because it is so rewarding by demonstrable improvements in performance. So, right, if let's say you get bit by the powerlifting bug, you end up on a powerlifting program and you get stronger. It's one rep max squat, one rep max bench press, one rep max deadlift, right? And that works for a period of time, and you know, maybe competing and enjoy that. But invariably, just like everything else in the fitness, you know, the fitness world, it stops working, you know? And so then you're left at this crossroads. You're like, well, I could keep, you know, running my head against the wall, doing the same program and try to eke out maybe a little bit of gains, or you almost have to reassess, like, do I need to broaden my horizons, train stuff that I have been neglecting over the past few years because I've been so specified? And I found, like, personally, not only my personal experience, but also programming for people that have been competing for, you know, a long period of time, that diversifying and doing stuff that we normally wouldn't program, whether it's stuff like, you know, closely related variants like front squats, or even stuff that's like further kind of off the reservation, like a push press. Why would a powerlifter train a push press, or like an axle press, or like single arm, you know, clean to press? These things that you wouldn't say, wow, that's got a direct carryover to the squat bench or deadlift. But getting more proficient at all of these tasks seems like, not only is it fun and reduces the risk of overtraining for these folks, so they kind of are like, wow, I'm really excited to go train because this is new and I can see some improvements, but also seems to like carry over reasonably well if and when they do decide to hop back into it, whether or not they're fresher or more motivated to like return to stuff they have a lot of history with, or if we've like shored up some gaps in their physical development, it does seem like that works. It's like you diversify your exercise portfolio, and then if you come back to something the more specific, it almost seems like it improves their position. Have you noticed that to be true in your own experience? I guess, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And one example of that was I did this program for a year, this, you know, bodybuilding. I say bodybuilding, but people tend to think that has some competitive goal to it. Like, are you going to be on your, you know, in your shiny underwear, like posing or dieting? You know, no, it's hypertrophy training essentially. But I was following this bodybuilding program for about a year. And then I decided beginning of this year that I would ramp up and do California Strongest Man without much strongman training recently. And I jumped in and did surprisingly well at some of the events. A couple in particular, one would be the overhead press, the circus dumbbell. Once I jumped back into circus dumbbell training, I was beating my previous best. And the lockout especially felt extremely easy. And I think that was attributed to just doing a ton of direct tricep work, which I had not really done before. Mm-hmm. So I think that had a really good carryover. Another thing was some of the events like the Conan's wheel. I was not doing a whole lot of deadlifting in my training when I was doing the bodybuilding routine. It was a lot of Romanian deadlifts and, 8 to 12 rep range, pretty close to failure. And I really, really think that helped with the Conan's wheel, especially. My lower back, glutes, and hamstrings were just conditioned to carry that thing for a long distance.
Yeah.
And I actually used the exact same Conan's wheel, heavier weight, took it farther than previous California Strongest Man competitions. It was lighter and I weighed more and I did worse. Also with the Conan's wheel, you hold in your arms like a Zercher carry. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the direct arm work that I was doing made my arms stronger. There's definitely some things that I wouldn't have known had I not actually done it myself. And I didn't do the bodybuilding training in hopes that it would improve some of the strongman, metrics, but it did. There are some things like that. And I think that to go back on something you had mentioned, or something I mentioned, when I say that I'm, you know, what I say, gym literate, like I understand how to use the gym. I understand how to do these movements, what movements, why this movement, why that movement, why not this movement, and et cetera. I think that not everyone's fortunate enough to have that, beginners totally. And novice, someone walking in the gym the first time. I can't just tell them, you know, just go ahead and do whatever you like. You know, there's thousands of exercises. Unless you're really motivated to like do that, then sure, go ahead. But most people are like, just tell me what to do so I can start somewhere. And so they would need, you know, a pretty structured program. And I think that's why a lot of people do get, they focus on specificity and they kind of get sucked into that specificity. So I think that there is a reason for that, I think.
Totally. Yeah, it makes sense to me, especially like however you get sort of interested into the gym or like hook bit by the bug, it depends on what gym you go to, like and you know, what are people doing there, because that's effectively your social circle at the time, especially around the gym. So if, you know, you turned up at Untamed Strength completely untrained, right? And you see, all right, there's people doing powerlifting. There's a lot of people doing strongman. There's not a lot of bodybuilders, like competitive bodybuilders or even recreational bodybuilders. Not to say that there's none, but just proportionally, it's more powerlifting and strongman. Odds are you're probably going to get interested in powerlifting and strongman. And if you decide to compete and you get bit by that bug, it's going to work. Whatever, you know, doing the specific stuff is going to work for a few years. But, and you know this to be true based on your experience with other competitors, you can see improvements for a couple of years and then you plateau. And one of two things happens. You either figure out how to get better or you switch to something else. You just, oh, I'm going to do MMA now, or I'm going to become like a some sort of endurance athlete. I miss the MMA window. I can't go there now. And I do wonder if there's something to like this, you know, however you're brought into the gym scene. You get attached to those movements as like, these are the most effective movements. Otherwise, why would I be doing them? And so when it comes time to change it, you're almost resistant to doing so, right? If someone was like really bought into like the back squat, this is the best leg exercise you can do. And you coach them, you say, hey, you know, let's do a block of Bulgarian split squats, like pretty heavy. And they're like, well, why? Why would I use one leg instead of both legs? And you're like, no, we're just, you know, we're going to switch it up for a few weeks, you know, work on some balance, work on some single leg strength, work on this different range of motion, different muscle lengths, whatever. And like, it like does not compute, you know, it's really, yeah, it's difficult sometimes to move past people's attachment. And certainly this happened with myself, people's attachment to specific exercises. If their belief system is that these exercises are the best, that's where I started, I've got this connection to them. Yeah, it's interesting that you've been able to effectively completely change your program and not kind of suffer any like mental stress about doing so. You kind of enjoy it more than anything else, is what it seems like.
Yeah, there's something I want to say to that. But before I do, I have two things to say. I see that firsthand from people, you know, just being a gym owner that retire from powerlifting or, you know, they do it locally, competitively. And then something happens to where they're either too busy to actually follow a powerlifting program, or they have a bum hip or something like that. And they'll say, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, got to take a break from powerlifting for a year or so. And, they don't train at all. And so in their mind, if they can't one rep max squat, bench, deadlift, what else are you going to do in the gym?
What's the point of training? Yeah. Don't train. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's plenty of things you can do with so a bum hip, you know? But they just, like cut it off cold turkey. Cause they don't, I mean, and granted, they might just be thinking of it purely as a sport. I do this sport. They're not saying, you know, I do powerlifting because it's good for me or because it's, you know, it gets me to stick to some physical activity. It's nothing like that. It's just, I do this sport. I can't do this sport, so I don't go to the gym, which I guess to each their own. But the other thing I wanted to mention when you had talked about how, you know, I'm able to not have this like, this connection to titles or whatever. I can make an adjustment when I want. I've just thought to myself, like, you know, for me right now, what is the point of trying to pursue, you know, a 565 squat? Why can't I just be good enough with a 450 squat? And so that was kind of my thinking, that I'm not necessarily healthier. I'm not setting myself up for success in the upcoming decades by, you know, striving to put 100 pounds on my squat for the level that I'm at. I understand that if my squat was like 100 pounds, yes, there'd be a lot of value in getting it to 200 pounds. But I'm talking about pushing it from 450 to 550 and beyond. And so there was just, I just don't care about that as much. And I don't think that it's as necessary to chase. And so I actually thought about this recently. I think you posted like a 525 squat for 5 reps or something like that. And I know at least right now, you're not competing in powerlifting. Right. Maybe you will in the future. I don't know. But a question I have for you, just kind of challenge your thinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the point, right? And I'm just kind of, this is just for entertainment, but what is the point of trying to hold on to this 550 for 5, 525 for 5 squat outside of just personal enjoyment? Mm-hmm. There's no competitive reason for it. So the only thing would be you personally just enjoy being as strong as you can. The only other thing I could think about, like setting you up for success in the future is, I mean, 525 for five, I'm just making this number up, but 525 for five has a longer half-life than if you were, you know, for when you're 70 and 80 years old.
Yeah.
But do you, like, why, I understand the importance of being strong.
Sure.
But like pushing your one rep max farther and farther and farther and farther and farther, this absolute strength to these numbers, is there a point to it? Or
well, no, you kind of hinted at it and then said it almost perfectly. There's diminishing returns, right? Like, I don't know how strong a man in my demographic needs to be in order to like reduce their risk of developing disease or some sort of like a functional related condition where I, you know, was unable to live independently. I don't know how strong you need to be in your 30s and 40s for that to like, for the rest of your life, to set yourself up. It's kind of one way to view this is like with osteoporosis, so loss of bone mass, right? We think it peaks like in your third decade, something like that, particularly for women. And then it kind of declines throughout life. And the higher peak you start at, you know, the better you set yourself up in the future. Obviously, getting into strength training later in life for women is certainly beneficial, can help preserve and maybe even develop some new bone mineral density. But you want to start from the highest peak. So that is an interesting thing. That's not where I'm coming from personally. You hinted at it. It's like personal enjoyment for me. Being as strong as possible is enjoyable. And the only reason that I'm choosing to sort of train for strength with the movements I still have attachment to, squat, bench press, deadlift, is because I do have these delusions of grandeur that I'm going to return to the platform in short order. So I turn 40 this next year. I'll be masters division. And I'm like, I could sign up for nationals. I could potentially win, right? Dr. Lane Norton and I would have to do some battle. But if I won, then I would go to Worlds. And I've always wanted to go to the world championships and compete. So I'm like, I could do that. And I probably have a window to do that in the M1 division in the next, you know, couple years. And then I just don't know that like I'm going to continue to want to pursue this indefinitely. But for right now, I'm like, well, I'm already strong. I still like doing the movements. And I think I'm going to compete a number of times in the next few years. So that's why I'm still doing it. I had this sort of it was like decision-making time, right? Because I want to race a lot more motocross, but I also want to compete maybe at the international level in powerlifting. But these are two like unrelated pursuits. So I'm like, if I want to choose moto now, I should probably take my resistance training volume and cut it in half. I just don't need that much to maintain, right? A decent level of strength and muscle mass and whatever. I need to do a lot more conditioning. I need to do a lot more riding.
Is that just for time's sake?
Yeah, exactly. It's just a time thing, right? If I had unlimited time, I could do everything, but unfortunately I still got to work, you know? So we'll wait for Barbell Medicine to, you know, reach Huberman level status and then I could just train all day and I'll be fine. So, but then I was like, but I'm already strong. So if I chose moto now, and again, I have another like handful of years for a window, and then I got to come back to powerlifting and get strong again. And then hopefully I'm at the international level. It just seemed like that's probably a harder road to go than if I did powerlifting first, then return to moto at a more competitive level. But yeah, if I hated squat, bench, deadlift, and there have definitely been periods of time where that's been the case, I am 0 out of 10, not going to subject myself to heavy sets of, you know, 3 to 6 reps on SBD. Because to your point, why would I force myself to do something that's not enjoyable when there's no real payoff for something that I'm seeking, which is in this case, I want to be healthy. And I do like being strong, but there are plenty of exercises that I could get stronger in. I could, you know, pick a side quest for front squat, but I'm like, well, if I'm going to squat and I want to get maximally strong and I think I'm going to compete in powerlifting, I should probably train the back squat. Yep. But if I had no sense that I was going to compete again in the next year or 2 years, I probably wouldn't do that many back squats. Certainly not heavy ones. It would just be something more moderate and focus my energy and resources on something else. I think to your point, people finding exercises that they enjoy, that they can make progress on, and they look forward to doing so. That's kind of the art in programming. And for me, I'm still interested in SBD, squat, bench, deadlift. But you'll notice, and then I'll let you kind of weigh back in, I don't do the overhead press that much anymore. And there was like a few years where I was training the overhead press as like a main lift, you know? It's because I hate it. I hate the overhead press.
Really?
It's like, I was training it 4 or 5 days a week. I was training it like a bench press, you know, with you know, six different variations and doing singles and trying to get really good at it. I got up, I pressed 137 kilos, which is just under 300 pounds. I was like, yeah. I really wanted to do 300 pounds. But it took so much work to like get good at it that now for me to train it, it's disappointing. It's like every time I touch the overhead press, I'm like, God, you suck. You're terrible. You're so like I did 225 for 10 once, right? And now 225 for a set of four feels like, oh my God, that's hard. And it's not because my shoulders got weaker or my triceps got weaker, just that skill, that specific skill decayed a little bit and I'm not as good at it. So some people would say, well, why do you care? Why are you attached to it? And I'm like, I don't want to be this way. I just am. So instead of doing like heavy barbell overhead press, I'll do a high incline press or dumbbell press or football bar press or axle bar press, things I have less of a connection with. And I can still train that vertical press and I can still get the, you know, benefits from doing that, which is general strength development, general muscle, you know, stimulus and whatever, but it's not something I have this connection to. So yeah, I'm kind of, I guess following your footsteps for the overhead press, but still attached to SBD. I feel like I can PR my total again, and I feel like I can do it at 40, and I feel like I can do it in a high stakes setting on a meet platform, maybe make my way to Worlds, which I think would be, the dudes would like that. I don't know that anybody else would care, but the dudes would like that.
No, for sure. That's well said. And that makes a lot of sense. If you really enjoy doing it, why not?
Totally. Speaking of returning to the platform, are you going 2025 California Strongest Man? Are you going to, that's like what, March?
Yep. Undecided yet. Okay. There's a possibility, but I haven't committed to it yet.
Because you'd have to start training for that. I mean, like you said, you have been lifting weights. You do some, I would call them strongman-y elements, you know, although that maybe bears a discussion, like what is a strongman exercise? It's effectively anything because you don't know what the events are going to be. You'd have to start training now, you would say, for maybe like a March meet?
Sort of depends on the events. And I do know the events looking forward. They're pretty standard axle bar clean and press, which I do cleans and I do overhead presses, not that technical. Yoke walk, I would have to get used to that maximum weight, just get my, let my back and my tissues like adapt to that again. I'm not just going to jump in and do that. Atlas stones, I'm pretty familiar with. So it's nothing too technical. And I've done it long enough that I probably could jump in. But I'm undecided if I'm going to do that or not. It's honestly down to, do I want to adjust my training to facilitate, you know, peaking for this competition? And if yes, then cool. The gym's been busy. I've been busy with life. And I really enjoy my time to like get away from all that and go train. And I just don't want to add extra stress to my training. To make it seem like, all right, today you got a yoke walk 600. I really don't want to. What else do I have to do? It's kind of like that kind of determines whether or not I do it.
Yeah. And it's not just the fact that you'd have to do the yoke walk, right, for X amount of distance. It's that, well, now you're attached to the weight that you have to use because you're like, well, look, if at the competition they're going to use this weight, I've got to use something that either progresses me to that load or I got to use that load or whatever. So it's really difficult when there's a competition attached to it. Like, yes, it can be more motivating, but also that motivation is a double-edged sword because now you're attached to like the performance in each workout and the sort of, you know, how does this reflect on your performance in the future? It just, everything matters more. The loading, did you do all the reps and whatever.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum, founder of Barbell Medicine. And over the last 10 plus years in business, we've built a team of amazing professionals that includes physicians, physical therapists, dietitians, and strength coaches that are available to help you reach your goals. Whether it's strength and muscle gain, weight management, or recovering from an injury, we have some of the best coaches in the game and have worked with people from all walks of life. From teens to grandparents and beginners to elite level athletes, our experienced team of professionals work together to meet you where you're at and give you what you need to succeed. That's the Barbell Medicine difference. If you're not sure exactly what you need, take the quiz linked in the description below or send us an email, support@barbellmedicine.com, and we'll get you sorted. From all of us here at Barbell Medicine, we look forward to hearing from you. We'd love to help. This podcast is sponsored by Incogni. Anyone who's been on the internet knows that online privacy and data protection is a big problem. Every year, both the number and severity of personal data compromise goes up. And according to the 2022 annual data breach report by Identity Theft Resource Center, the number of victims has gone up by nearly 41.5% from 2021.
In the US in particular, there's a big problem where people search individual websites to create detailed personal profiles on millions of Americans and publish them online for anyone to see. The bad news is that your personal information is probably being sold or published online without you even knowing it. The good news is you have the right to protect your privacy and request that data brokers delete the information that they hold about you. Let Incogni do the work for you. Incogni reaches out to data brokers on your behalf, requests your personal data removal, and deals with any objections from their side. It's easy to sign up, and once you do, the entire process is automated. Incogni also keeps you updated about the progress. They're also offering Barbell Medicine listeners a promotional rate to get started. Use promo code Barbell at the link incogni.com/barbell to get an exclusive 60% off an annual plan. That's incogni.com/barbell to get 60% off your annual plan to protect your privacy. Go incognito with Incogni. This podcast is brought to you by Rosetta Stone. 2025 is here, which probably means you're reflecting on what you hope to achieve and perhaps even considering some New Year's resolutions. Learning a new language in 2025 with Rosetta Stone is a great goal, which comes with the added benefits of exploring new cultures, connecting more deeply with others, and oh, by the way, it's 50% off for life. Now, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program for the last 30 years, with millions of users in 25 languages offered. It's also available on desktop or as an app so you can learn anytime, anywhere, and it uses an immersive experience to help you learn the language of your choice quickly, along with the correct accent using its true accent speech recognition technology. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. And did I mention it's 50% off for life? Start the new year off with a resolution you can reach. There's no better time than right now to get started, and Barbell Medicine listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Head over to rosettastone.com/today and get 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Again, it's 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
It's actually a good segue. I had this thought because, again, you're the strongman savant, the strongman whisperer. There in the exercise science literature, when it comes to like injury risk, right? If you look at all barbell sports, so bodybuilding, powerlifting, CrossFit, Olympic weightlifting, strongman, Highland Games, the average injury risk is 2 to 4 injuries per 1,000 participation hours. Now, if you go weed into that data, bodybuilding, powerlifting seems to be a little bit more on the lower side, closer to that 2 range, whereas strongman, Highland Games stuff tends to be outside of that window, closer to maybe 6. Although there's not a lot of data on strongman and Highland Games competitors because there's just not that many of you guys out there. So the question I have to you is, do you think that that is a reflection of maybe the unique elements of the sport, like higher velocity movements or, you know, more dynamic movements compared to like a squat, bench, deadlift? Or is it because the events are so unique that most competitors can't actually train enough specifically to prepare for the competition? They may not have, you know, if there's fingal fingers at a strongman competition and you don't have fingal fingers in your gym, you've got effectively no preparation for that. And you're just like, well, hope I'm strong enough to do this, but you may not be like prepared for that. Or stones, if you don't have access to stones and now you got to load stones. It's like, I understand the technical aspects of it, but you haven't done it enough to be like, to tolerate it. Does that make sense to you? Like,
absolutely.
What do you think about that?
I think that the main reason would be, there'd be two particular reasons. One is just I think a lot of those injuries might've been, they weren't listed, but they might've been classified as equipment malfunction type thing. Like I dropped a keg on my foot. I smashed my finger between an Atlas stone and a yoke crossbar. Those are the most common injuries that I see, that I've seen since owning the gym, has been, fails of dropping something on an appendage. And then I think that it's just the environment of powerlifting, for example, is so much more controlled than strongman. So if you were to watch nationals on fast forward, 10X speed, it's going to look essentially the same. Everyone's going to take like the same amount of steps back to the squat, same amount of range of motion, same in. Everything's pretty much the exact same, very controlled. Whereas in strongman, not so much. You might be sitting on the ground using your entire back to pull a truck, and then you're going to jump up and you're going to push that truck. And so there's just greater ranges of motion, I guess more unfamiliar ranges of motion, planes of motion. I jump up and push a truck and I hurt my Achilles. It's so much more dynamic. And like you had said, the velocity of some of the events comes into play. I would say that would be the reason for the higher rate of injuries.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the sterile environment of powerlifting, for example, and certainly bodybuilding training and bodybuilding competition compared to the dirty, we'll call it, environment of strongman Highland Games, not only due to the variation in, you know, competition movements, but also like you don't know the standard. You could be on grass, for example, versus concrete versus sand versus, you know, it's just, it's really hard to prepare adequately, you know, for a strongman competition, because even if you know the events, they still may be different when you get there and show up to the competition. They'd be like, yeah, we thought we were going to do Atlas Stone loading onto these platforms, but that didn't really work out. So now we're going to go over a bar, for example, yeah. Or it's like load and carry, you know, something. And it's just different. That happens frequently.
And I think that with powerlifting, you get to select your own weights, which helps a lot. So yeah. As long as nobody's just making a fool of themselves, they're picking weights that they know they can handle, or it's at like the right at the top end of their ability. So they're going to reach it a little bit. But with strongman, a lot of times it's, hey, this is a 400-pound implement. Who's got it? And there are lots of people, especially at the local level. There are some people there who have no business being there. You know, like you're not ready to be here at this competition, but they jumped in and, you know, went for it anyways. So it's much more unpredictable in that sense. Whereas if I see someone taking their first attempt, almost always taking their first attempt squat, it's going to be a weight they can handle, the weight that they've done thousands of times, hopefully. So, yeah.
I think back to my very first Raw Nationals, 2012, Killeen, Texas. The president of USAPL is in the warm-up room, right? And I see him fail a squat. And I was like,
oh, no.
What? And I was like, hey, are you good, man? I didn't know that he was the president at the time. It was just, he was like an older guy with really cool weightlifting shoes from like 10 years before that. And I'm like, he's an OG. This guy knows what he's doing. How is he failing a rep in the warm-up room? He goes, I usually try to take my second or third attempt in the warm-up room to make sure I have it. And I was like, wait, what? That's the most, I don't know that he does that now. And honestly, that story is now 12 or 13 years old. So it could be some revisionist history, but I remember seeing that it was very scarred. And I was like, okay, make sure to choose your attempts wisely here.
Yeah, that's a problem with geared lifters I see at the gym. Not to say specifically anyone at the gym, you know, untamed, but a lot of the geared lifters, they just do an entire prep of bands and chains and a box. And then like a week out, they'll be like, you know, post on their story, like doing free squats today. I'm like, what's a free squat? And it's just a squat without all that stuff.
Regular squat. Yeah.
Just to kind of see where I'm at, you know, and it's like, you haven't practiced the thing that you're doing at the meet, you know, ever, but you're just going for it, like hoping that these numbers translate, I guess. And so that's often why a lot of geared lifters will bomb out. It's pretty common to, you know, they've just, so anyways.
I try to explain, like do a metaphor, a golf metaphor, which I realized as soon as when I was in the middle of the metaphor that I was like, if people don't play golf, this doesn't make any sense to them. But it's like some people, most people that are competitive golfers, high level golfers, they play a lot of golf, meaning they're out on the course, they're shooting a score, they're in a dirty environment for golf, right? But you compare that, all right, I'm going to play a handful of times a week and I'm going to practice at the range a few times a week. That's my golf program. You compare that to, I'm only going to the range. And I'm only going to hit, you know, 27 irons in a row and then 20 drivers in a row and then whatever, practice my short game. There's some utility in that. But if that was all of your exposure to the sport and then you showed up to a competitive golf match, a tournament, I don't know that that's going to go that well for you. And sometimes when people are following programs where they have little to no exposure to the actual competitive movements, I'm like, you had an opportunity to get ready for this, but you didn't. Like, why? Who sold you this bill of goods and why did you believe them? Like, you kind of messed it up. Yeah.
That makes total sense. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, there you go. You followed it. I don't even know how big of a golfer you are, but you followed the analogy.
I know enough. Yeah.
You know enough. Yeah. So if strongman may be more risky at the level of the meet, you know, like, because again, some of the elements we talked about, do you think there's a benefit of putting strongman training in people's programming, even if they're not a competitive strongman athlete?
Yeah, I think that if it tickles their fancy and if they're somewhat interested in it and it helps with adherence, then yes. If it helps to provide a little bit of exercise variety, then sure. I just think that most people who do it just enjoy it. It is fun for them. I wouldn't put too much of it in a competitive powerlifter or competitive weightlifter's routine. simply because they have limited recovery resources. And so putting more strongman training in their routine, it's either going to be so light that it's not offering any sort of adaptation or forcing any sort of adaptation. Or it's just so heavy that they could either be using that towards something more productive, or they could have just gone home, wrapped up the program and left. Cause they're going to be squatting three more times this week.
Yeah.
So it depends on the individual, I guess.
I like it from if for people who are like cardio averse, you mentioned the word like, hey, I would like to get you to do some conditioning or whatever. And they're like, no. And you're like, okay, but what if I had you push this sled for a little bit, right? Or do farmer's walks or do waiter's walks or yoke carries, or hey, let's make a game out of these light Atlas stones if they had access to them. It's like a way to get them to like not only use the strength that they've developed in this sterile-ish environment, but also a way to like keep them moving continuously, which they otherwise may be averse to. And I think it is fun, can be fun, as long as it's not, something that they can do. But otherwise, I don't know. I think people probably powerlifters and Olympic weightlifters are not included in this conversation. But if you're a regular gym, person, a gym rat, I think some of the strongman stuff could be pretty useful for like physical development, especially if you do a lot of machines and you do a lot of stuff where it's just, both legs at the same time, bilateral exercises. Well, let's do some funky stuff with the strongman just for fun. I guess if you hate it, okay, that's another thing. But I do think there's some maybe gaps in people or holes in people's games if they don't get exposed to any of this stuff.
Yeah, I think that it is good to be on your feet and move weight, balance, just your body's, awareness and kinesthetic awareness, getting used to using your entire body on like a push press or something like that. Certain movements like, hey, we're going to do an Atlas stone load. Here's how you do it. Or a sandbag load or sandbag pick. They have to get in these really compromised positions. An Atlas stone load is essentially like a caveman deficit deadlift. You've got to get your knuckles on the ground. So it's just an extreme deficit deadlift. You have to round over, flex your back. In order to extend and load it up to a high enough platform, you have to take your spine through a lot of flexion and extension, which might be an easier way to get people to do that rather than saying, we're going to do Jefferson curls. So it just without thinking about it, they are moving way more than with this very rigid, I got to do my deadlifts like this, and I can't have any sort of deviation. So it can also be good for exposure in that sense.
Yeah, and learning new motor patterns, right? You get different ways to figure out how to move, so that I think there's some transference there. If you had a person who was strongman curious, we'll say, but they're in a commercial gym. They're not an Untamed Strength. They're at a well-appointed commercial gym. What are some exercises they could do in the commercial gym? Like the first thing that comes to my mind, I'm like, well, you could do Zercher squats, which would be, holding stuff, Conan's wheel. Like that stuff seems like it might transfer. You could do like farmer's walks for sure if there's a space to walk with. What other sort of stuff would you think about programming in if someone's in a commercial gym and wanted to do some strongman stuff?
I think if someone was doing like a squat, bench, deadlift, beginner, novice program, the first thing I would say would do a push press and do a front squat. Those would be the first variations I would suggest. But then, like you mentioned, a Zercher squat where you're doing just front-loaded squat in your arms, a Zercher deadlift. I think all those things are great. Doing some sort of carry, if you're able to, like a farmer's carry. I know that, 24-hour fitness or a Crunch Fitness or a Gold's Gym, they usually have like that strip, that turf strip for sleds nowadays. You could do farmer's walks down and back on that with kettlebells or something like that. So I think those would be the best exercises to do, the first ones I would do. But I would also just change. You can also just do work for 60 seconds, 90 seconds, even 2 minutes, or even 10 minutes. So I might just restructure, hey, we're going to do deadlifts. You're going to do this percentage of an estimated one rep max, and you'll do an EMOM, 3 to 5 reps every minute on the minute for 10 minutes. Or just do some sort of like giant set. Like I want you to do 30 total reps and try to do as few sets as possible. Sets and reps are up to you. Maybe just prescribe, I want you to do 30 reps in 10 minutes. You figure out how to do the sets and reps. So it just gets them out of like, I get ready, I do this set of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, rest for 5 minutes. one, two, three, four, five, rest. So there's a lot of variation and utility in that as well. Just restructuring how you're approaching sets and reps.
Yeah. It's like work capacity, energy system development stuff. I've had people like, they're like, I know I got to be ready for a yoke, like, I don't have a yoke at my gym. I'm like, oh, no shit. At a 24 hour fitness. No, there's not a yoke there.
Lifetime Fitness yoke brand.
Well, so what I would have them do, I'd have them basically unrack a bar in the rack and do like a march. They just sit there, you know, 135, and they're marching, right? Obviously, it's not as heavy as a yoke, but that's where they start, and they can add more and more weight. You could do it with bands, like a banded march, for example, or even like, hey, you got a minute. We're going to put 50% of your one rep max squat on the bar, many reps as you can do in a minute. And there's some like maybe mental development, pain tolerance, you know, from exercise, some work capacity stuff. Yeah, there are options there. And we kind of put that in your in the strongman template. But you're going to be taking some strongman clients. Is that a thing? I heard that through the grapevine. Is that a?
Yeah. If anyone's scrolling the Barbell Medicine website and they're wanting to do some strongman, I'd absolutely be down to help. And that's whether they just wanted to incorporate that in the routine or if they specifically had a competition they were getting ready for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be happy to help.
That was a super fun period of my life for training wise, getting ready for that strongman meet. Now, granted, it was a local meet, whatever, right? Yeah, your place. But the scariest thing was I was 4 weeks. The time between my powerlifting meet and the strongman meet was 4 weeks. So like I got done with the meet and I'm like, well, I'm demonstrably strong. I'm like, I'm peaked. I'm real strong, but I'm so deconditioned for everything else that's not SBD, which is by design. And now I'm like, oh crap, I got to do like, well, the axle deadlift, that's fine. My biggest problem with the axle deadlift was like finding straps that were long enough that allowed me to do it. But then it's like, oh, I got to load stones. I got to, you know, a medley. I got to pull a truck and then push it. I'm like, what do I bench press? Is this like a bench press? What is this? How do I figure out how to do this? It was a really cool, fun time in my life, minus the fear of like, okay, I'm real, real strong, but I'm not really prepared for this. So like, how do I make sure I don't get hurt? But yeah, you gave me some really good advice. You're like, just go, don't be an idiot. Just go light at first and figure out how to do the movements technically. And then you can add weight. I'm like, okay, all right, Alan, that's very basic advice, but thank you so much. You saved my life.
I think that you were strong enough at that point to really just jump in. Like doing you got first place in the yoke walk event. And I think that being able to squat over 600 helped, you know,
when it didn't hurt
on your back. And then I think you got second on the axle clean and press only because you were strict pressing the weight.
Couldn't push press. Yeah.
You didn't even attempt to push press it. Deadlift was fine. Yeah. And then contrary to popular belief, I think you actually do some conditioning and it showed in the truck, the row and the push, which is heavily dependent on. Everyone's going to be able to row or be able to pull that truck, you know, the first 5, 6, 7 rows, they're all going to move it the same distance. Mm-hmm. And individually, everyone might be pretty even, but when you put it all together in this 90-second event, it's just a matter of who gasses out first.
Totally. Yeah.
So yeah, if you're able to withstand that for 90 seconds of constant work, then yeah, it's going to help you. So.
It was a lot of fun too. I did have a lot of fun at the strongman meet. I think if I were better at it and then also had a way to train it more directly, I would potentially be interested in doing that more than powerlifting. But because it is so like to get good at strongman, I almost feel like you need to have access to some of the implements on a regular basis. It'd be really hard to be like, I'm in a Snap Fitness and I'm just, you know, getting stronger. Of course there are stories like that, but I, you know, no national level strongman competitor is like, yeah, I just show up to the meets and I have no idea. I've never practiced these things, you know, all training. That's not really conducive, I think, to competing at the level I'd like to. Although it would make an interesting YouTube vlog. So maybe we'll just do that. To end this podcast, I just knew that you had some hot takes probably on this. It's gym equipment. All right. Like if people follow you on Instagram, which they should, on Tame Strength, you regularly post stuff on either things that break in your gym or stuff that members have done. We'll leave the bathroom stuff out of this particular discussion. But can you think of like pieces of equipment that you've bought that you would say like underperformed based on your expectations that you were like, yeah, maybe avoid this because yeah, it's not, it's a piece of junk. You don't have to name the manufacturer unless you want to, but what sort of stuff you feel like, man, don't buy this. This is junk.
I would say that the one piece of equipment that I think is the most money I've spent on a piece of equipment that was just a flop would be the Elite FTS Sissy Squat platform.
Oh yeah.
I think it's like $600 and it's just this foot plate with a pad that goes behind your calves and then in front of your shins. And it's just for sissy squats. It's a nice piece of equipment. It's cool. It just takes up footprint in the gym. Nobody ever uses it. I never see people using it. And so that was like, maybe I shouldn't have even worried about that. I think the other thing, I think it's important to get steel or metal collars, or at least aluminum collars. Yes. Plastic collars, just people, when they're done, even something as simple as taking off the bar and like tossing it on the ground, you know, they're going to break. And so, and those plastic collars can be like $40 each for a pair. And you just run through them weekly. You know, it's like, man, this is like my collar membership that I have to pay for the rest of my life, you know?
Why the plastic ones, it's not even just that they break. They do, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if you toss them on the ground, whatever enough, they get loose. They like stop doing their job.
And they have these little rubber stoppers inside of them and they just wear out over time. If you think about a collar on the bar and the plates jarring it just a little bit, kind of like rubbing the rubber off. I don't know if it's lower quality rubber or what, but they just eventually slide off.
So, yeah. Those metal OSO collars or similar stuff that I think Rogue sells them, they're great. Like I've had a pair now for 6 years. I just keep them in my gym bag and it's like, and I'm lifting relatively heavy, clanging and banging, doing the thing. And I'm like, these things are almost indestructible. I would have to like, the only way I'd have to get a new set is if I lost a pair, which is definitely possible. But I definitely agree on the plastic collars. Okay, here's what I think is, I don't think you have one of these, to be clear. Although now that I'm doing my mental inventory of Untamed Strength, you might. The Rogue box squat, like the metal one with the two, it's got like a piece. That thing is a piece of shit. It's it's like 100 pounds. It was heavy, right? It's too big to really use for like a box squat unless you're like equipped or sitting way back or like, you know, have a foam pad on top or whatever. The adjustment's a pain in the butt too. And I'm like, Rogue, why did you do this? Like who was the, you know, your R&D person on this? Like, hey, make this big, stupid box. It doesn't really work that well. We're going to sell this for a couple $100.
Yeah. I don't know if maybe if you have just an enormous backside, you'd want a bigger box.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure off the top of my head, I think that box actually has on the feet, it has holes in it that you can drill in concrete. I'm like, who would ever do that? Did you not think that through? You don't drill boxes. But and I have a Rogue one and an Elite one. I have the same box that you have, or that you mentioned. It's heavy. Trying to adjust the pins underneath because it's so heavy is like just a pain.
Yeah.
Mine is actually one corner is bent and down. I don't know what happened. Someone might've dropped a squat, like a bar on it. And it
must've
bent.
Been. I don't know. Yeah. Otherwise I think that thing's bomb proof. I feel like, look, if you were going into battle and you needed to bring like shielding and you were short on something, you could carry that. Like it would slow you down, but it would definitely stop a bullet. That thing is, bomb proof. Okay.
I mean, maybe it's the wider footprint makes it more stable. I don't know. But I don't think that we've ever needed to test that.
Nope. I would say conservatively speaking, you've probably purchased 100 barbells in your life. Like just, you know, all in 100 barbells. Do you have a favorite and a least favorite barbell that you've trained with?
My favorite barbell is actually the BNR. I'm serious.
I'm
with Tom on this one.
Yeah.
Behringer and Ripito, the 1.0. I don't know if they sell it anymore, but you can tell the end has the
split cap.
Like the Texas Power Bar where you can put the oil in at the end, but it also spins independent of the shaft at the top. But it it's bare steel. The knurling I think is appropriate. It's not like a kabuki deadlift bar or something like that.
That thing sucks too. Yeah.
The knurling still, it's still a good knurling. I don't know if if the steel, somehow the knurling has still withstood over all these years. Mm-hmm. And then what I also like about it is that it has center knurling, but it's not super aggressive. So I can front squat or even power clean with it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't shred my neck up.
Yeah.
But that's probably my favorite bar. I don't get off on like deadlift bars and squat bars and all that. I do like the, I have a couple Texas power bars. It's the Buddy Caps Texas power bar.
Yeah.
I do like those. They feel good. It's like the power lifters, or I'd say the stiff bar of deadlift bars, because it's a smaller diameter.
Yeah.
So it feels good. But it's so old that it makes so much noise. Like when you, like when you deadlift and drop it, it's just like rattling cans, like inside the, so it's probably getting pretty old, but my answer would be the B&R bar.
Yeah. For a single
what do you have
bar,
the B&R bar.
So my biggest complaint is mostly from a powerlifter's perspective, because the collars rotate so much. Like, it feels weird to me to bench press heavy with it.
Does it rotate even when you're benching?
Yeah, that's how I can feel it. Yeah. Like, I can feel it. I'm like, all right, well. And look, this may be a Princess P type thing where I'm just like, but yeah.
I mean, that's what we're talking about, is the specifics of barbell. So, yeah.
But for on a squat, it does feel quite nice. With the knurling, like you said, it's not terribly aggressive, but it's aggressive enough. That feels fine. Deadlifts, I have no real issue with it. It's mostly on bench press. But to your point, if you were trying to pick a single bar that you could front squat with, back squat with, do cleans with, whatever, yeah, hard to beat, especially the original version. The second version is not as nice. It doesn't have the split collar on the end. You can't oil it from the end or whatever. But the price point's also hard to beat, $350 or whatever it is. Hard to beat. Do you have a least favorite barbell?
Not any other than I just have really old, cheap barbells, like a Big Five barbell or Sports Authority barbell or something.
Okay. I'm going to give you two options here then.
Go ahead. What are the two options?
Two options that maybe you've experienced, and I think you might agree with me that these are the worst barbells you've had. All right.
Bring it to my attention. Maybe I'm not thinking about it.
An Oki deadlift bar.
No, I haven't. I'm well aware of it, but I don't. Maybe I have in a meet and I didn't realize it, but no, I don't have one.
So I picked one of these up in med school because they were, at the time, it was the only deadlift bar you could get that was 20 kilos. And it was a Ricky Dale Crane, you know, special edition Oki deadlift bar. So it was quite expensive. I don't remember the price offhand, but, you know, back in the day, I remember thinking, like, this is like a premium piece.
Yeah.
It, like, not first, the bar doesn't spin at all. It's like it felt like the bearings were out of round. So you'd have to like rotate the bar into a place where it would like not be wonky. And then it would click. Like when you went to pull on it, it would click every single time. It was like weird. I was like, this is unsettling. I feel like this bar is going to snap. Obviously it didn't. I'm still here. Tell the tale. But I was like, what a piece of junk. No offense to Ricky Dale Crane. Great lifter. Yeah. But like that bar could use some work. Second, maybe worse, is the Kabuki power bar. I think that thing is just junk. No offense again to those folks, but like there was at California Elite that I trained at down here for a while, they had a chrome Kabuki power bar, and that, what a piece of junk. It's like the knurling's not aggressive enough, right? Then the ends spin and you're like, this is a power bar. Like, what are you guys doing? Yeah, I don't know. Have you ever lifted on? You've had a Kabuki deadlift bar, which is also junk.
I have Kabuki deadlift bars. And actually, the Kabuki deadlift bar is the only bar since I've opened that I had a problem with. Other than a bar being bent, like someone, you know, dumped it off their back and it bent. The bushing in the bar just fell out. Like it just slid down the shaft of the bar. And I contacted them and they got back to me quick and they were like, it was actually, I don't think Chris Duffin's listening to this, but messaged Chris Duffin and he responded and he's not even he stepped away from Kabuki.
Oh, okay.
But he was like, you can send it. He said, what I would suggest is getting just some Loctite adhesive, putting it around and then pushing it back up and let it dry. And then he said, you can send it back to us if you like, and we'll fix it. Probably the same way I just said it. And I was like, all right. So yeah, it seems to be fine with the Loctite. But yeah, I've never had a bushing just fall out of the bar.
Yeah, that's wild. I've never seen that.
It was a newer bar. So yeah, I'm like, how does this happen? It's like one job of someone putting a barbell together.
Put the bushing and make it stay.
It doesn't like slide off the barbell. That was the only bar I've ever had a problem with.
my favorite bar of all time, still the Olaiko competition powerlifting bar. It's like, it's perfect in every way. They really thought this through. And I understand that the price point makes it, it's out of reach. Like
right.
If you're at home gym, do not go spend $1,000 on a barbell unless you have just, you know, all this discretionary income, in which case consult one of us, pay us, and we'll help you pick out all the equipment. Yeah. But so I think the that bar is my favorite. And if I had to pick one, like if I was just building a new home gym and I couldn't use that bar that I already have, I'd probably buy the Ohio Power Bar, the kilo version, with just, it feels the same. And I still, again, have these delusions of grandeur that I'm going to be a great powerlifter one of these days. So still in it. Just,
I do have an Olaiko Power Bar, and I got it secondhand, so I didn't buy it brand new, but it was in great condition. People are just so attracted to that bar, just right for it. It's that little red Olaiko sticker on it. I just love using that bar. And I don't know, man. I just don't know. Like I've never, using 500 to 600 pounds. I've never, unless it was just a garbage barbell, I've just never really noticed any of these nuances of bars. I don't notice it. But
yeah, no, I think I've talked myself into it. They do have a new, it's like their WPPO. It's for the Olympic Games. They have a powerlifting competition bar specifically for that, which is interesting because the bar itself, you wouldn't want to do like squat and deadlift with because it's similar to their Olympic weightlifting bar. Anyway, that's nuances aside. There's a speed sensor, a velocity sensor that you can put into the end cap without waiting. Yeah. So like at
no
some
string
point,
or anything, it's just like a data on your app.
And there's an app. Yeah. Yeah. And so I was like, I don't want the barbell. I just want that technology. Like, can I take that and put it in my barbell? And they're like, nope. And I was like, what? Come on, man. Like,
what does the bar cost? Like $1,500?
It's $1,200.
$1,200.
Yeah. And again, it's the dimensions are like a Olympic weightlifting bar because it's 28 millimeters, right? Just like an Olympic weightlifting bar. It's chrome and it's got that light knurling like an Olympic weightlifting bar, but it's a powerlifting bar. And I'm like, I don't want the barbell. I just want the end cap. So I'm thinking, I'm like, could I make a hybrid barbell, a Franken barbell, if you will? Like I buy this thing, I steal the end caps. I put the other end cap. I don't know. If that happened, maybe that'll be my DIY project for the winter. We'll see.
I'm sure it would work. I actually have at the gym some of the most obscure bars. I have a 25 kilo bench bar.
What? This is like a West Side bar or something?
Yeah, it's a man. I
or
actually
maybe a Wolf. Maybe it's Wolf Sport or whatever it is. Yeah.
It was. It's used in a certain geared powerlifting federation, and there's a group of geared lifters at the gym who compete in that federation, and they really like training on the gear they're going to use. And so I bought it for the gym. This was a few years ago, so I don't remember what the brand is. I've never even used it. I don't even know. They explained it to me. I still don't know what makes it a bench press bar.
Yeah.
It looks similar, but I also have a 30 kilo squat bar.
Yeah, I've used one. It's terrible.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like squatting with rebar. It's like, okay, now you have a 8 foot long piece of rebar that you're squatting with. It does not, there's no movement. It's huge in your hands. And you're like, this should, if anything, it should feel super stable. Like it can't move. It doesn't. It just feels like a big dumb thing on your back.
Yeah. There's, there's like, 800 pound squatters, geared squatters at Untamed. But I think any standard squat bar is going to be fine for that. Yeah. I think maybe if you're like that 30 kilo squat bar, if you're putting on over 1500 pounds or something like that, like
maybe
something like absurd, look, maybe you would need that bar. But
if Big Ray and Carl Yngvar Christensen can squat over 1,000 on the Olaiko standard power bar and walk it out or whatever, it's good enough for me. I'm never going to touch that weight, but, yeah, some of those big squat bars. I've done a few USPA meets, and I'm just like, I got to use this big stupid thing again, and I just hate it. But at the same time, it is what it is. That's like if I had the perfect powerlifting federation, you use one bar, it would be the Olaiko or similar. You'd walk out your squats. There would be no judges, no judge commands at the meet. Like so you would just, for example, you'd walk out a squat, you just squat it. And they would tell you, like, did you have control of the weight before you did it? Did you hit depth or whatever? Same thing on a bench press. You would just, okay, it's out. And then you would pause it and do a rep. And they say whether it was good or not. It just, that would be my powerlifting my federation. Also, there would be music. In contrast to Tom, there would definitely be music. I just don't want to hear people, like, you know, their GI rumblings on the platform.
Yeah. Maybe if it was an outdoor event and there was some, like, ambient noise, that would have been fine. But yeah, it was just so quiet. You hear the belt, like, crinkling as you're squatting down, and I'm like grumbling. Exactly. GI noise.
If I'm here, hearing,
as you're getting ready, like, hear someone coughing, and then, like, you can hear someone in the back, like,
yeah,
texting away.
Yeah.
Like a silencing room.
Yeah. I don't want to hear a fart. Like, I don't want to hear any of that stuff. Like, just drown me out with Five Finger Death Punch or whatever sort of music. I feel like every powerless you meet has the same playlist, you know, seemingly. So
yeah, there should be. I'm sure Spotify has a powerlifting meet playlist. Powerlifting meet radio.
Yeah, it's Metallica, it's Pantera, it's Five Finger Death Punch, it's Disturbed. All that stuff. Oh man, Alan, I'm so disappointed that this is the first time I've had you back. It's embarrassing on the podcast. Obviously, great interview. You got a lot of experience and a lot of pearls for our folks. So I'm going to link all of your stuff in the description below, where to follow you on Instagram. If people, for whatever reason, have been living under a rock, they don't follow you on YouTube, I'll be there, including a strongman template and maybe some coaching application stuff. But I want you to leave our listeners with your signature Train Untamed. I haven't heard it in a while. We need it for posterity on this podcast. So you can give these people your signature Train Untamed, please.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me, dude. It was good talking to you. And always remember,
Train Untamed.
And then cut.
Hey everyone, Jordan here from Barbell Medicine. Now, we'll get to the podcast here in just a moment, but I wanted to take a second to plug our Barbell Medicine Plus option in order to help support what we do here on the podcast and beyond. Now, if you hate these ads just as much as we do, you should know that Plus members get ad-free episodes, as well as early access to our podcast, written episode summaries, videos, exclusive training information, access to a members-only podcast where Dr. Baraki and I answer your questions directly, and more exclusive content as well. If you want to support what we're doing here and become a Barbell Medicine Plus member, head over to barbellmedicine.com/plus and sign up to be a Plus member today. That's barbellmedicine.com/plus to help us out and get rid of these ads for good. Thanks for your support. Let's head to the podcast.
This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours, so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See home club for details.